You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
So I'm really pleased to welcome Jess and Oliver from Christian Aid, who will be chairing this panel session called From Communion to Climate Action, Where Does Greenbelt's Communion's Money Go? Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. My name is Jess Hall. I'm from the campaigns team at Christian Aid. I'm a campaigns and organising officer, and it's great to be with you in the no-fly zone this morning. I'm sure that you've rushed over from communion, or maybe you got a snack along the way. And this year, you'll have heard that the communion offering is going to, part of it is going to some of our partners working in Gaza with the humanitarian response to what's happening at the moment, but also in what comes next. But last year and the year before, some of the money from the communion offering went to Christian Aid's partners tackling the climate crisis, and in particular, one of our partners in Bangladesh. So we're going to spend some of our session today sharing a bit more about that project in Bangladesh and the work of our partner, as well as exploring some broader questions around climate justice. And I'm really glad to have Ollie here with me, who is our Chief Policy Officer, Chief Policy Officer, is that right? No.
That's fine.
Got your job title wrong, sorry. To talk a bit more broadly about our climate justice work. But to start with, after this next bit, we'll talk to Ollie, and then we'll hear also from one of our colleagues, another colleague in Bangladesh, who was in conversation with our colleague Pete before the festival. And then we'll have some time to have a conversation together with any of the questions that you'd like to ask us. But we're going to start by hearing a bit more about the project in Bangladesh that the communion money from Greenbelt has supported. So we'll watch this video next.
I'm here in Kurugram in Bangladesh, visiting the Climate Resilient Microfinance Project. And we've been able to go out and visit some of the microfinance borrowers and hear some of the stories of how the project is impacting their lives. The aim of the project is really looking at how we can change the way of doing microfinance to make it more climate resilient and more gender sensitive. So some of the stories we've been hearing from women today have been about how previously they would take out loans, and 6 months down the line, a disaster would strike, there would be flooding, and they would lose a lot of their crops, a lot of their livelihoods. And then there would be a struggle to repay the loan. So we were hearing about how women would previously take out loans at their husband's request, and they would have very little control over how they spent the loans and what they could use the loans for. So it's been really interesting to hear about how, with the training that they've received, they've learned how to do climate resilient agriculture, which previously they were getting no training. When they got out alone, they weren't getting any training. But now with the training that they've received, they're able to make educated decisions as to what livelihoods to invest in, what crops to invest in, what types of seeds to buy that will be resilient to flooding and drought and future climate shocks. And we've also been hearing about some of the activities that the project has been doing to engage men and have conversations over the benefits of working together as a household to decide what income, what your income should be spent on, and how to best use the loan. We were also able to go and visit two ladies, actually, who received a grant from the project alongside a loan. And the reason they received the grant is that they'd previously, their livelihoods had been very damaged by flooding, and they'd lost their incomes and they were having to start from scratch. So they were selected to receive a loan and alongside that a grant to help them rebuild their livelihoods. And it's a new model that we're really looking at, how it can work, distributing grants through microfinance institutions to address loss and damage. And we're hoping there's ongoing research into how effective the model is. And we're hoping by the end of the research that we'll be able to showcase that more widely across the microfinance sector.
The women said that at the same time, they have also undergone sessions around gender equality, and as well as not only them, but as well as their husbands. And so now there are, which has led to a lot more combined decision making and sharing of care work and reduction in violence within the house, and as well as a reduction in child marriages. In fact, today we heard about some of the women narrating stories about how they have taken a very a positive role in preventing child marriages from taking place.
We are, of course, conscious that what we are trying to do with our ITL project is a small step. It's really a stone in a sea. But what we want to do is we want to demonstrate that this can be done. And we have an advocacy component within the project where we are looking to engage with the sort of the policy architecture of these microfinance loan schemes. So that way we want to, that we see as an entry point for making a bigger change. At the end of our 2.5 years, at the end of our 30 months, where we want to see is that we have a set of protocols which we would have been able to test on the field, that this is how a climate resilient loan should look like. And we should also have more and more women involved in the decision making, participating in the family decision making. And we will also have we will put our proposition on the table that the microfinance loans, there is a need to relook at how these loans should be given out and what their use should be. On a parting note, a final message for our ITL supporters is that we are deeply grateful for the generous support that you've extended to us over the years, and we believe that we are putting your resources to the best use, and the difference we are making in the communities where we work is something that we are very proud of. So thank you very much.
Really, really great to be able to give you a flavour of the projects that are happening, particularly in Bangladesh, around tackling the climate crisis and standing in solidarity with people who are most impacted by them. And in this, we've been able to see some of the work with partners in Bangladesh. I'm going to turn to Ollie now to ask you a few questions. The work that we've just seen, is that characteristic of ChristianAid's climate change kind of program work, the kind of stuff that our partners are doing day to day?
Yes, Jess, I think it is characteristic of the kind of programming work that ChristianAid does when we're trying to address this injustice of climate change impacts around the world. Many of the countries where we work with local organisations are facing the impacts of climate change in an increasingly acute way. And we're trying to work with those organisations, with communities, so that they can do a number of things together, as we saw a bit in the film. First of all, we know that communities, particularly if they're dependent on agriculture or farming more broadly for their livelihood, how they can best adapt to a changing climate. So we heard in the film about having more climate resilient seeds or crops that can withstand more easily flooding. So that is the kind of adaptation work in the technical jargon that lots of our partners are trying to do. But alongside that, we also saw in the film that the actual impacts of climate change are happening more and more to more people around the world and in increasingly acute ways. So we heard also in the film about how KrishnAid, through partners, are supporting people who, after a climate disaster, may be left without their crops, without their homes or other assets. And in those situations, what we are trying to model is being able to provide direct support to those people. And we think that most of the time, that's best done by giving people money as a grant so that they can work out how they can rebuild their lives and livelihoods. And what we're trying to do through that is not only help support some of those people directly, but demonstrate that because we're talking about climate justice, that's the approach that should be taken much more broadly, and that there's a real responsibility that we want to see taken, particularly by governments of countries which have historically polluted lots and caused the climate crisis, to provide grants, particularly when we're talking about those impacts that we can't adapt to. So I think the programming that we've seen here is trying to talk about how we deal with the changing climate that many of us are experiencing in different ways around the world, the climate impacts when they do happen, when a disaster occurs, and also, lastly, and I think we heard this a bit through the voice of some of the women, particularly in the video, about the power to change some of the bigger policies that mean that we are living in a warming world. So things around, again, in the jargon, mitigation, so that we reduce our emissions, but that we act more responsibly towards each other more broadly. So we heard about relationships within families, within communities, and about holding governments to account a bit more. And so we try to work in that holistic way in our programming.
You've touched there on the role of governments, and a lot of your time at KrishnAid is spent trying to influence governments, trying to change policies in processes like the UN climate talks and other spaces. How do you connect back to the work that we've just been seeing in those spaces? How do the two kind of fit together in the work that you're doing?
I think sometimes the world of UN negotiations can seem very distant to some of the farmers or other communities that we saw on the video just now. But I think one of the ways that KrishnAid can help bridge the gap is by bringing some of those partner organizations, some of the communities affected, directly into negotiations. So for instance, when we have the annual meetings of the UN climate conference known as the COP, we often try to make sure that some of our partner organizations are there in the negotiations. And they often have very good contacts with their own government delegations, whether it be in Bangladesh or somewhere else. And they can not only bring their experience of working in those communities, such as in flood-prone areas or Bangladesh, to their own governments, but to other negotiators at the UN conferences. I think another way that we try and do it is by working with those organisations to produce the evidence that supports the advocacy and the campaigns that many of us more widely are involved in. So, for example, I know we're going to, in a little bit, see a video involving our colleague Nusrat, who leads our loss and damage work, the work about how communities are affected by climate change. Nusrat and I work together exploring the options for how governments, particularly in richer polluting countries, can and should be paying into the newly created loss and damage fund, a fund which was agreed at one of these UN climate conferences a couple of years ago. And we analysed the different options and said, well, what would that mean for communities that KrishnAid supports through our partner organisations. And we try to present that evidence and demonstrate how some of the climate impacts that we're already seeing are affecting communities and how, at the moment, there isn't a systematic approach to helping those communities that are affected by floods in Bangladesh or storms in Malawi.
It's really important in those spaces, those UN spaces, for those voices to be heard. And we obviously want to be able to stand in solidarity with our partners and with what happens in those spaces. But obviously we can't go there, but we have just had a general election in the UK. We're just 2 months out from that. So we've got a whole fresh crop of MPs or newly elected or re-elected MPs. How do you think we can be taking these kinds of stories, this kind of the evidence that you were talking about, how can we take those that information to our MPs and have the most impact? And what could that lead to?
Well, I think there's lots of things that we as Green Belters can try and do when we're thinking about how to engage our MPs. I think one of the great things about coming together in this kind of space is that we realise whether we come as supporters of KrishnAid or whether we come as environmental activists or whether we come caring about justice in our own church communities, we have the wherewithal to engage our MPs and bring some of these issues together. We know that when something affects our church community, that it's those that don't have as much money or don't have the wherewithal to necessarily look after themselves, as we saw during the COVID crisis, that look to others in their community to see how they can find that support. And I think when we talk about the injustice of climate change, many of the same trends play out. And we use the word solidarity, I think, Jess, and using the insights, the voices, the experiences of KrishnAid's partners and the communities that we work with, I think can bring the reality of what is sometimes quite an abstract set of issues around climate justice to our decision makers, including MPs. And of course, we can link that to our own experiences. We know that in this country, we're experiencing the impacts of climate change through drier summers, sometimes wetter and more unpredictable winters and other seasons. And that's having an impact on our lives, but it's probably not quite to the extent of some of the impacts that we've seen in Bangladesh or in other countries around the world. But what is common is the need to take action within our own communities, our own countries, and globally. And I think that we can bring those stories that we heard on the video about the impacts of climate change in Bangladesh. And we can do so both with a kind of lesson, as it were, that these things are serious and they are happening now. But we also, I think, heard a story of hope that when we make use of the power that we have as individuals or as communities, we can do things to forestall the impacts of climate change. We can use more climate resilient seeds. We can grow more climate resilient crops. We can adapt to the wider impacts of climate change, but we do need concerted action, right? We do need, for instance, to be talking to our MPs about what the role of the UK government is, about reducing emissions in this country, about paying into the loss and damage fund, and also making sure that we're spending our development budget effectively so that we're tackling the causes of climate change as well as the impacts.
Absolutely. I love that you mentioned power in there somewhere, because I immediately think about how much power we give away because we forget that we have the power to talk to our MPs. They're our elected officials, our representatives. Even if you have a tricky MP, they should be working on your behalf. And there's, like you're saying, there's lots of ways that we can bring stories like these, like that we've heard from Bangladesh, to bring it alive as it, so that it doesn't seem like an abstract idea. This is about humans. It's about our global family. A couple of years ago at Greenbelt, during the communion, some of those stories were brought to life by our colleague Nusrat, who we're going to hear from in a minute, and our colleague Joab, as they talked about the impact of the climate crisis that they're seeing day to day themselves in Kenya and Bangladesh. And a week or so ago, our colleague Pete sat down with Nusrat to talk about that, and we're going to watch their conversation now.
Seeing. I was wondering if first you could tell us a bit about yourself and about your job at Christian Aid.
Thank you very much, Pete, for having me. My name is Nusrat. I work with Christian Aid on climate policy, in particular loss and damage, which is often considered as the third pillar in climate actions, negotiations, or policy. And it comes sort of after mitigation and adaptation on loss and damage. This is sort of the sequence in climate negotiations, evolution. And this is my role. I work within UNFCCC structures, but at the same time, my work is deeply connected and rooted with country programs, including Bangladesh, which happens a lot most of the time, actually.
And you're based where, Nusrat?
I'm based in Dhaka.
Right.
In Bangladesh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where you're speaking from today. And you work in our global advocacy and policy team, that's right.
Yes, so it's the GAP team I work with.
Yeah, and so I'm conscious that some Greenbelters might not know what things like the UNFCCC are. So that's the kind of UN climate talks. People might be aware of it through the COP meeting, which we often talk about. There's one happening this year. I forget where it's happening this year. Where is it this year?
So it happens in different locations every year. So this time it's happening in Baku, Azerbaijan,
yeah.
So usually the rotation like this, sometimes it happens in developing countries, sometimes in developing country to sort of have a balance. So this is how usually it takes place. But at the same time, a lot of negotiations happen where it should take place. So, and for a couple of years, it is in this region, mm-hmm. moving from one country to another. But yeah, this time, this year, this is Baku, Azerbaijan.
And you're part of the team that often goes from Christian Aid to those negotiations, aren't you? I'm just interested if you could say a bit about that. What's that like? What happens there?
a lot of work for two weeks. So in this type of conference, all the delegations need to be up and running almost most of the days because it's very high level political engagement, leaderships. And that is why I think every minute, every hour is really, really important. And many, many negotiations take place in different rooms of the place. As civil society organizations, Christian Aid is part of it. And we have that opportunity to work with government delegations. I work with Bangladesh government delegations and sometimes with developing countries and delegations so that we can put a proposal in place which, at least from our perspective, which is balanced, which is rooted in climate justice. This 2 weeks is like a marathon yeah. of work. And the work goes on throughout the year. I, for my convenience, I think it as a project cycle. So mm-hmm. a year is a project for me. There are many, many opportunities to work with UNFCCC structures, different type of inputs we are required to make. We do it voluntary. And at one point, in one part of the year, all those things are heard and negotiated, and some kind of outcomes come along with high-level political engagement. So this is sort of how this thing work under UNFCCC.
Great, that's really helpful. Yeah, it's just really good to hear from someone who's involved in those talks that we quite often talk about at Christian Aid and will be saying to people at Greenbelt or other places. You know, it's the COP, and lots of people at Greenbelt will remember when it was in Glasgow and you were there in Glasgow. We were there together trying to influence people there. But it can often feel like a sort of abstract thing, but you on behalf of Christian Aid and our partners are actually there in those places having those conversations with those politicians and other influencers, which, you know, is so important in terms of shaping the action that we want to see on climate. So it's great to hear about Nusrat. I just before we came to this part of the program, we watched a film of Christian Aid's climate work in Bangladesh, and you're in Dhaka. I'd just be really interested if you could tell us a little bit more about how you see climate change impacting Bangladesh.
For us, climate change is really complex and complicated in many, many ways. I think we are a small country and we are very dependent on nature, environment, surrounding us. And if you see the geography of Bangladesh, you would see the more than 90% of the water, which is generated in Ganges, Brahmaputra and Meghna Basin, it comes through Bangladesh. So it's like the rivers are like funnel. So all the water, it comes through Bangladesh and they empty into the Bay of Bengal. So for Bangladesh, a teeny tiny changes in upstream, you know, in that basin, in the Himalayas, has huge impact on us. I would like to mention that we are great adapters, by the way. Flood is as part of our life. Yeah. A certain level of flooding is a blessing for us because with that water, with that soil, we grow food, right? And if we have good harvest for one year, we are good to go for that year and maybe a couple of months as well. But because of the changes in the climate, the weather, it's just a nightmare for our farmers because there are early floods. So monsoon floods, it's okay with us. But if the flooding time changes, it hits our, you know, the cultivation period and everything. Yeah. Sort of everything changes. And this is one thing. This is regular flood. And God forbid, if the money comes from this the northeastern part, which is again a massive passive flow of water, it hits, we call it the rice basket of our country.
Yeah.
So that is why the changes in, you know, rain arrival, departure, it has massive impacts on our food security. And they are farmers, they are fishermen, they are boatmen. This is how their life have been, right? So I'm just talking about floods. We have other climate disasters, like we have cyclones, river erosion. We have storm, we have tidal surges. So this is a very small country and the water comes from upstream and our southern part is with the Bay of Bengal. So it's this part is open to cyclones,
yeah.
Right? So so this is a small country. So whenever there is one disaster happening in one part of the country, it will have either direct or indirect impacts on sort of all the population. It's the privileged, less privileged among us, they are the worst hit. Because these are very, very simple people. They live on, they're like farmers, they live on their fields. They're boatmen, they love to catch fish. This is their life has been, right? And they have, I mean, almost zero contribution to the climate crisis. Mm-hmm. And I live in capital, so I would say I am very privileged because I have had roof over my head. My house is not flooded during monsoon, or I don't have to work under, you know, scorching heat under the sun. For a couple of years, it's like 38, 39, 40, 42. So the farmers, the fishermen, the boatmen, the rickshaw puller, the van puller, the day laborers, their life is really, really difficult. And here the humidity is massive, sometimes 88, 89, 91, something like that on very disturbing days. So it impacts our life and in many ways. And I am one of the 24,000 people living per square kilometer in Dhaka. So the people displaced by climate, they are sheltering in Dhaka, and it is having massive pressure on the infrastructure of Dhaka. Dhaka is like maybe around 300 kilometers. Mm. And I can't remember the statistics properly, maybe 500,000 people come to Dhaka and 1/5 of them are climate migrants.
Wow, yeah.
So people's life are impacted by climate either directly or indirectly.
Yeah. That's really helpful, Nishrat, and it really brings home just how huge the impact of climate change is. And you know, we've talked about it before, you and I, haven't we, about the kind of impact that we're seeing now in the UK and starting to see much more extreme heat and extreme flooding, but the, you know, the even greater consequences that you are seeing in Bangladesh, and also, as you say, the fact that the people most affected are the people who have contributed least to this crisis. It's, you know, just brings home just how unjust it is, and why this has to be something that we as Christian Aid and our sisters and brothers are really doing something about. And so I'm interested in what that means then in terms of what we should be calling on our governments to do. So we've heard a bit about how you are in those spaces sometimes, Nishrat. You're at the COPs, you're working with colleagues here on talking to governments about the action they should be taking. What should we be calling for right now so that we can tackle this crisis properly?
I think the call should be, let's have a talk together. Mm. If you're not aware of it, if you have some time, we are happy to talk about it, what we are experiencing. I think as a human being, you can allow some time to listen to, right? The type of work, the system we are in, it's always about me, what I do, this kind of stuff, right? But at the same time, it's, I think, as a human being, you can allow some time, you know, spare some time to listen to what's going on. Mm. And especially listen to people's stories who are victims of the crisis they did not contribute to. Mm. So if there is an opportunity to maybe speak with your MPs or whoever, you know, in your friend or whoever it is you think is happy to listen to what you want to say. And in the UNFCCC negotiations, I think they have this opportunity to speak with us if they want to.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that as faith-based organizations, they are a separate sort of system in UNFCCC. If they want to meet us, I think I have been meeting with many of the government delegations, including UK. So we can have the discussion. Let's have, you know, a discussion, and if you want to know more about it, we are happy to contribute. And the experiences, the evidences generated at different country programs of Christian Aid, those are really, really powerful. And just listen to us, and then as a human being, you take a decision what you want to do. And I'm sure as a human being, you cannot do injustice to other people. So it's just a call to think as a human being.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Nusrat. And yeah, I think that message that almost the most powerful thing we can do is to tell those stories, to listen to those stories and then to tell them and to share them. Because I think all of us often think it's about understanding. I mean, you're one of those people who knows the policy detail. You read all of the big UN reports and things like that, and you have to be on top of the detail. And for many of us, it's difficult for us to do that. But to hear from you that actually the most powerful thing to do is to actually listen to the stories of the most affected people and communities, and to share those stories with our representatives, our MPs, our governments. That's really helpful. Thank you. I wanted to finally ask you, Nusrat, if you would be able to say something about your faith as a Muslim, and whether or how that's important when you're campaigning for climate justice.
I'm Muslim. I practice Islam, and sometimes it's tough. As I was saying, it's always the way we are sort of structured. I tend to think about me, right? But the Quran, the main book we follow, it instructs me to think about others. This is the mandate as a practicing Muslim. So as a practicing Muslim, I have a duty towards my Creator, and also I have a duty towards humanity, other people, human rights. So growing up, I have been reading Quran, learning from my parents that this is, you have to follow it, whether it's difficult for you at times, but as a practicing Muslim, you need to think about other people, because you are fortunate, you are privileged, but maybe things could change and you could be in their position one day. You don't know, right? This is how faith things work. So do as much as you can, because sometimes you have resources, sometimes you don't have resources. So use that as much as can, because this is the duty and also this is the opportunity God has given you, Allah has given you to do something good. Use it, or otherwise you might lose this opportunity. So this is difficult, Pete. Absolutely difficult, the way we are structured, our thinking and everything. But you have to do it. Otherwise, we talk about afterlife, right? So
yeah,
you might... God might not like it. Allah will not like it.
Nusrat, thank you. Thank you for giving us your time today. It's really wonderful to hear about your faith and about how that inspires you to act, to hear about the impact that the climate crisis is having directly on you and your nation, but also about how you are taking all of that to take action and to help to influence those people with power to do something about climate injustice. It's been really, really inspiring and really illuminating. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Pete, for having with me. And yeah, thank you so much for giving this opportunity to speak to people who cares for others. So it's my privilege. Thank you very much.
I don't know about you, I find it both devastating and inspiring to listen to Nusrat talking about the experience in Bangladesh and the work that she is doing and how her faith moves her into action. Really, really wonderful to be able to have her share with us at Greenbelt. We've got a bit of time now to open up the conversation for any questions that you would like to ask. And hopefully there is a friend with a roving mic somewhere. Oh yeah, there you are. Hello. So if you've got anything that you would like to ask about the partner that we heard about, the In Their Lifetime project, the microfinance project, or other things related to the work that Ollie does, or any of the stuff around campaigning here and talking to our MPs, then we'd be really happy to answer any of your questions. So if you just want to stick your hand up, the microphone will come to you and we can chat.
I'd just be interested to know that there's all the stuff going on, Christian Aid and partners and ground level, people like us who care, people like us who are trying to raise our voices. And then it seems like there's the big companies out there who, I don't know, are they actually starting to listen? Do you think that there's the gap between us down here and our voices and actually the real power and money? Is that closing? Are we really making a difference? Is anything really changing?
Do you wanna?
Well, it's a very big question, and I don't think there's a simple yes or no answer to it, probably. But what I think it is possible to discern is that the voice or the voices of campaigners, of people taking action in their own lives, of people advocating and lobbying their governments and other decision makers is having a positive impact. Without the actions of Greenbelters, people in the climate justice movement more widely, I don't think we would have a loss and damage fund agreed at the UN. And I don't think we would have as much pressure on governments and some of those big companies to take action to reduce emissions. Now, clearly, we've got loads more to do to make that action more effective, speed it up, and more just. But I'm inspired by the kinds of stories that we've heard from Bangladesh, and I'm inspired to be part of the Greenbelt crowd and to feel that energy and that sense of agency and power that we can have. And I think Jess reminded us that we've got a new government here in the UK. We've got relationships that each of us can establish or re-establish with our MPs. And yes, as well as talking to them, we probably also need to engage more with companies and other decision makers. But let's not forget that the power that we have as consumers, as constituents, as churchgoers, as people involved in climate justice more widely.
Thanks, Ollie. Any other questions? Anything anyone would like to ask? Yeah.
Thanks. In a way, it's a related question, but we're looking at so many crises across the world. We're looking at war very near to home. And my question is, have you noticed that perhaps there's a slippage in our governments looking at the longer term issues around climate change and really being distracted is perhaps the wrong word, but you understand what I mean, in terms of engaging what's happening in Ukraine or et cetera?
I certainly think that's a very clear danger. And I think just looking at the news that we see, there's a danger that we are consumed too much by dealing with the here and now, whether it's the effects of war in Ukraine or whether it's the immediate aftermath of a climate disaster, rather than trying to address the long-term causes of both war and climate change. And I do think that we need to use the power that we've got, whether it's as campaigners, whether it's as teachers, whether it's in our churches or in other roles, to work out how we deploy the power, the resources that we have effectively. I think what we saw a little bit in the film about the work in Bangladesh was that the women involved in the project are trying to tackle the here and now impacts of climate change, but also deal with the long-term changes that they're seeing. And I think we've got to try and do that too in the work that we're involved in. So at Christian Aid, for us, I think that means joining up the programming work that we do to our advocacy, to our campaigning, saying, yes, we need money to address the impacts of climate change that we're seeing now, but we also need to be investing in the green transition, in making our world more sustainable for generations to come. And it is partly about how we can make sure that the issues that we care about, including the long-term causes of climate injustice, remain on the agenda of our decision makers. And I think we have to make sure that when we have the opportunity to engage, whether it's with our MPs, whether it's during the budget, which is coming up, or other elections, or the UN climate conference meetings, that we aren't only talking about the here and now, important though that is, but that we're talking about how we can forestall more of those acute climate events happening in the medium and longer term. It is a challenge, but we have to try and take that on, I think.
I think there's also something, isn't there, in joining the dots between different issues that are occurring. And what you will start to hear more as a bit of a trail is the intersections between economic injustice, like debt justice or debt injustice, and the climate crisis and the injustice of the climate crisis, and how those two fit together. So for our MPs, we're able to join the dots between different things that are happening around the world. If a country is deeply indebted to a private creditor, they're not able to respond to the impacts of the climate crisis. And so there's the need for climate finance. But if those debts are lifted, then there's more ability for people and for countries to be able to respond. So you'll start hearing more about some of those intersections between different injustices and how we can present those, present those to our MPs as well. Because often MPs will have maybe very broad knowledge, but not necessarily deep. They're not going to be experts on everything. And we don't have to be experts, but we can help them in joining the dots by talking about how these different things fit together and by talking about some of the stories that we've heard this morning or this afternoon as well. Are there any other questions we've got time for? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. That was a really, really great film. Stories are very powerful, aren't they? And we've been asked to share stories, personal stories. I'm wondering if you could recommend somewhere that we can find maybe some literature, films. Where can we find those stories so that we can share them with others? Got any suggestions?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you head to Christian Aid's website, if you head to the campaigning section, there'll be a drop-down menu and you can look for all things climate resources. And one of the things I'd really recommend to you is a page where there are four kind of testimonial videos, animations of young people around the world talking about the impacts of the climate crisis, about talking about the loss and damage that they're experiencing. They're really powerful. They weren't made by Christian Aid, but we've been given the opportunity to share them with you. You can find them on YouTube, you can look at them on our website. There are also word versions of those testimonials if you want to share them in your church by speaking through the voices of others or showing them as videos. They're really, really powerful to be able to share those. If you want to take those stories to your MP, that's a really good one to look for. Also, if you go head over to Christian Aid's YouTube channel, there's lots of videos exploring our partners' work around the world, and there are stories from communities who are experiencing these things, but not just they're experiencing them, but also talking about what they're doing in their own communities to tackle the climate crisis. I think it's so important for us to remember the agency and the activity. The people that will be in those videos are the ones that are responding first to the climate crisis, and they're often not those that are heard. You'll hear me and Ollie on the stage because we're here and now, but that's a really good place to look. To hear both their stories, their experience, but also how they are responding themselves to the climate crisis. any more for anymore? Yes, thanks.
Thank you so much. We can only speak from our own situations, the people we're with, the reaction they have to what you as Christian Aid are trying to engender. I think that the debt, letting go of the debt, is a way that we can engage by writing to the MP and just making sure we hammer away at him, who unfortunately is the last government staying in. So, but we are a very weak, middle of mid-Devon church. People don't want to give unless it's giving for their own. It's waking people up. And the only way I can do that, or Nigel can do that, is through our praying. And what I really want to ask is there a network? We've been coming to your brilliant prayer mornings. Is there any way of linking those up and then having that as a kind of eternal prayer link? So we're not only listening to stories, we're listening to God. And we need God to lead us through this, because he'll often find very rocky paths to go along. And the dear people in Bangladesh who are doing that is just superb. But we, as people living where we are, we have to know what to do.
Mm.
And we can plant trees. We have a small farm. We can plant trees, we can do all we can, and the farmers around us are doing the same. But somehow it's more than that, you know?
It's a really important point, and prayer is a really important part of how we respond and how we act in solidarity. And there are certainly have been initiatives within Christian Aid around prayer. I don't know if anyone remembers the run up to COP and our prayer chain and the prayer boats and people kind of pouring their prayers onto paper and us showing our solidarity through our prayer. And it happens in other parts of Christian Aid when we're thinking about what's happening in Gaza, for example. So we have prayers for peace for the Middle East. So we're always welcoming the prompt that we need more spaces to pray, and that we kind of anchor our action and our solidarity in prayer. So I'll definitely take that back to colleagues, that there's a keenness for more spaces for us to come together to pray outside of Greenbelt. And there's so many opportunities for us to do that online. So I will take that back. Thank you. We've just got time for one very short question, if anyone has one before we finish the session. But if you're mulling that, I just want to remind you that we have the opportunity here at Greenbelt for you to send a postcard to your MP, invite them to Act on Poverty. If you haven't had a chance to contact your newly elected MP, this is one of the ways you can do it. We have loads of information on our campaign's web pages around breaking bread with your MP. It doesn't have to be, talking to your MP doesn't have to be going to one of their surgeries in a very kind of specific them across the table, you know, like an interview. Invite them to your church, invite them to sit down and break bread and share a meal and talk about these issues that we care about. Share these stories from Bangladesh and around the world to give them an understanding of your church community and how you feel about these issues and how you want to work with them to act on poverty and to tackle the climate crisis. So there's loads of really great materials. I really encourage you to go and find them. And we would love to walk with you in that. So if you are feeling nervous about how to do that, we can link you up with your local Christian Aid rep, one of our staff members who can help you get ready for that kind of event. There's a guide that we've got, all sorts of different resources to help you do it. So if you'd like to do that, we'd love to talk to you about that. Oh yes, we've just got one last question that we can squeeze in, and then...
annoying person, it's not a question, it's just a comment, just to say please feedback to Nusrat. how fantastic I thought her presentation was. What an inspiring lady. And, you know, just to say from Greenbelt, thank you.
Thank you so much. We will definitely pass that back to Nishrat. Do you want to say something, Ollie?
Thank you for bringing that up. And I took the liberty of contacting Nishrat yesterday to ask if she had a message, because the video was recorded a couple of weeks ago. And two significant things have happened in the last couple of weeks in Bangladesh, and perhaps in some ways they're related. So you may have seen that there's been quite a high degree of political turmoil in Bangladesh, which has resulted in the former prime minister leaving the country, and there is essentially a sort of caretaker arrangement. And it's interesting to hear from Nishrat that, well, the key priority that the government and those that were essentially calling for changes in Bangladesh politically are very concerned about the impact of floods that have been happening in the last week or so. But I guess the story of hope that I was left with from Nusrat's message was that the caretaker government and many of the young people who are leading many of the demonstrations want to work together to see how they can tackle the impacts of the latest flooding, which Nusrat talked about, and how they can work to make people who rely on agriculture in particular more adaptable to the growing climate impact. So there is, despite the changing times in Bangladesh, I think they're a message of hope from Nishrat.
Thanks so much for joining us. It's been really good to be with you. And thanks so much, Ollie, for joining me. And we hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Do you want to say a few words?
I was just going to say, shall we just give Ollie and Jess a massive round of applause for just hosting us this morning and leading us in some brilliant conversations around climate justice. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.